Welcome to another episode of the SASMA podcast. Today we have a special episode with Dr. Sharif Hendricks. Sharif's obviously done an episode with us previously in his role of president of SASMA. But myself and Sharif actually got down to chatting about productivity, and Sharif's actually giving a talk next week on productivity, and somewhat based on the book Deep Work by Carl Newport. I mean, that's happening next week, Thursday. And in our conversation, we thought it would be a nice segue to go into for the podcast, just to chat about productivity and at the same time optimizing productivity. Because I think one of the big issues is a lot of clinicians and researchers, for that matter, we often have multiple hats on, and trying to optimize your work to reach those goals within those different lanes ends up getting difficult on top of having a family life after that. So Sharif, thanks so much for being willing to chat to us about this. So firstly, let's just chat about the productivity. I mean, what, in your eyes, what is productivity?
Thanks, Dinesh, for having me and having me again on the SASMA podcast. So I think the first couple of things that I want to mention kind of related to the talk next week, and we part of it will actually be given at the SASMA conference as well on the pre-conference workshop day. Mm-hmm. We have a session with Mike Lambert and Vincent Guttenbarge on research and getting published. And I have a little talk there on as well, the things they don't tell you while you're studying, essentially.
Or while you're researching as research. Well.
And it relates to time management and awareness management and writing, etc. And so this also relates to the deep work component. And so, related to what we discussed, and you've mentioned it now, part of these kind of bits that I'd like to share via talks and so forth, we're calling it the, and I'm doing it with some students at UCT, some honors students on the joint honors program, we're calling it the unproductive series. And so unproductive in brackets with productive series. And it's kind of, if you dig deep down into optimizing, I'm putting inverted commas here, productivity, and obviously, like you said, also family time, friends time, and leisure time. Dig deep down, it's actually strategies that are counterintuitive in a way, in terms of to get more done, you must actually do less in a way. And so it's just sharing. And so the part of this podcast, and hopefully we can, like we mentioned, we can discuss more of these. It's just me sharing key books maybe that we can recommend to the listeners, podcasts as well, applications, apps. I think that people can just, if they are looking into optimizing, again, in inverted commas here, productivity.
And I mean, Sharif, you obviously, like you said, you're doing a couple of talks outside of SASMA, but then you guys are having, I guess it would be like a breakout session with regards to productivity and assisting research. Why do you think it's so important that we actually start talking about this? Is it a newer problem that we're experiencing, or do you think this is quite an age-old problem, just manifesting in a different way?
I suppose it's an age-old problem, but I think part of the reason why, and I suppose why these authors and writers are coming about now, probably the new age challenge is the part that there are more and more distractions out there, whether it's social media, whether it's TV. So there's more distractions, and so it's getting harder and harder to do what is known as deep work and getting the meaningful stuff done with all the distractions out there.
Yeah.
And I suppose also a kind of nature of the work we're in at the moment, just in general, is that we're getting asked to do more and more with less and less time.
We all
have 24 hours in a day, and so it's essentially making the most out of that. And then obviously there's the component of, you know, like mental health and well-being, I would say, in terms of just stuff done, that's part of managing all of this.
And I think, I mean, I want to get to that as well a little bit later, but I think just to start off, when we speak of deep work, what are we talking about? I mean, deep work is very different to administrative type duties where you answering emails, filling out forms, whatever it is that seems administrative to you. Deep work, how would you define deep work?
I mean, there's probably a specific definition for deep work within the book. I'm not going to bring it up now, but it's kind of like doing one task, essentially. If I had to summarize it, it's doing one task over a focused set period and only focusing on that one task. And being in kind of in the book, he calls it knowledge worker. So, I mean, yourself, me, most of the people we work with in sports medicine are to some extent knowledge workers.
Yeah.
And so it's kind of creating, and if by extension, essentially, if you want to go beyond knowledge workers, creatives or any, really any thing you're kind of trying to produce or be creative within, it's focusing purely and only on that task, essentially. And Janesh, this is also a key component here. I'm sure we all know what deep work is in a way, deep down, and we've all experienced it at some point in our life. It's just trying to harness more of it and make it more out of it in our week.
Yeah, I mean, I'll just use personal experience from my side. I mean, and I think I looked at some of the book as well, and they talk about almost creating somewhat of a routine of having your constant space where you can do your deep work, minimizing your distractions, so leaving your phone alone. So I know, for example, as I step into my office, immediately I go into, let's say, a productive mode where I try my best not to answer my emails there. I use that specifically for, I guess, what you would term deep work. So it's work that I need to apply my mind for a more prolonged period. And that's definitely helped, even if I just have music or noise canceling just to block out all the noise. And I think that's where deep work is important. Like you say, once you experience that frame of mind where you're just able to focus, I think it never quite leaves you.
Yeah, 100%. And it's not necessarily getting just a lot done. It's maybe trying to figure out a problem. You know what I mean? And the problem doesn't take minutes or 20 minutes. It needs a solid like couple of hours for you to figure out things. But the purpose is that you only focus on that goal. And I suppose for me, a lot of it also relates, and a lot of people can probably relate to it, because at some point they probably have to write.
Yeah.
And so I'd say kind of writing is a very deep work task.
Yeah.
You can't just block off 30 minutes here and 30 minutes there. You kind of have to take 30 minutes and an hour just to get into writing.
Yeah.
And then start from there.
And I mean, we were chatting
about... And so in our case, it's writing, but you can imagine by extension, if you're studying for an exam as well. Do you know what I mean? But there's different examples in this.
Yeah. And I guess we were chatting about it briefly before we started recording, and it relates specifically to what you just said. Now, deep work generally requires time to almost settle in. So you need a little bit of time just to get your almost, I would say you need to switch your brain on into a different mode. And that takes a little bit of time. And that's why I guess some people who are highly trained in this can maybe sit down for 30 minutes and get a lot done. But I personally need like at least an hour to an hour and a half of dedicated time before I can be productive in this space. And we were just chatting about...
In the book, he does kind of outline certain strategies, because obviously there's the opposite of deep work, which is like shallow work. And so we obviously can't just stop doing shallow work.
Yeah.
So that's part of life. But he does outline certain strategies in terms of getting stuff done. So as an example, and he gives examples of this, and a lot of novelists, authors kind of use this example, is where they block off almost 3 months where they only focus on the writing of the novel or the book. And then there's that example, so that's a big, where you have a big chunk of your life or day or year dedicated to the project as well. Not all of us are as fortunate.
Yeah, I was
so
about to say.
You can bring it one level down. Maybe a week you can block off. Do you know what I mean? So you block off weeks at a time to focus on one task only, and kind of try to keep the shallow work and the distractions at a minimum. But then maybe some that's a bit more kind of reasonable, because of like you said, we wear many hats and we also have the day to day.
Yeah.
Or blocking off maybe periods in the morning, early in the morning, 2 to 3 hours. For the one specific task. In that way, it also kind of, so you're basically chipping away, essentially. You know what I mean? So 2 hours every morning becomes 10 hours at the end of the week, essentially. So that's, you can't afford to block off 10 hours, but 2 hours every day. And this works for me quite well, because what happens is it doesn't take as long to get into it, to settle into it, because 100%. It's always on your mind as you finish. And so this is like a little trick I do sometimes. I finish a paragraph for argument's sake, knowing what I'm going to start with tomorrow, so that the start is easier tomorrow, if that makes sense.
Yeah. Yeah, it's interesting. Sherif, I was going to say, like, again, you mentioned that. You mentioned the whole thing about settling in and getting sort of deep work done. It's funny how anecdotally I found the same thing, is that if I manage to do an hour and a half every day or every second day, it's easier to almost get continuity as opposed to doing, let's say, 6 hours on a Saturday and then leaving everything for another week. I find that it takes me longer to settle in a week later as opposed to just going an hour, hour and a half daily. I feel like my productivity over that 6 hours is better than 6 hour blocks, if you get what I mean.
100%. And here's the other thing, Jinesh, and this is a lot for students, especially clinician students doing their masters or PhDs while they're also doing rounds or practicing.
Yeah.
Is that in theory, they will look at the day and be like, okay, I have 2 hours at the end of the day to do my research. But in reality, unless you kind of stick with it and chip away and always stay within the frame of mind, you actually don't have 2 hours at the day, because at 2 hours at the end of the day, for argument's sake, you're tired, you're a bit low, your energy level's low. And then, like you said, then you restart it. And so what I find a lot with students is, they essentially work a lot on something for a week or two, but then get back into their normal daily routine, and then the project loses kind of steam.
Yeah.
But because in their mind also, they need a couple of days. Do you know what I mean? So they set that in their mind. But to start, they always set this a kind of like goal, and the goal never comes.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, yeah, the day just happens. And so, related to your point is I'd rather recommend or advise to them is rather stay on top of it. Even if you literally write 2 sentences a day.
Yeah.
Sentences,
at least you're still staying engaged with
away.
It.
Yeah, and it keeps you in the frame of mind, because what happens is when you're not working on the task, you're still working on the task, if that makes sense. While you're driving, while you're doing other things, you're still actually in the frame of mind working on the project.
No, it's great that it's almost like the idea and the thought process around this is actually more formalized, or at least for my brain, that works better, just to know that what I'm doing sits in a structure. Because I'm like I said, I'm pretty much the same, is that I try and get my, let's call it the deep work done before my normal day actually starts. And that just helps, because 4 or 5 o'clock in the morning, there's less distractions. Emails can wait until after 8 o'clock. Nobody's looking for you on your phone. And if at home, it's generally quite calm. So again, it's just, and I think that's the key to this, is finding out your rhythm within your day as to where you become the most productive.
Yes, exactly. So that's so sometimes I'd say, instead of time management, we speak about awareness management or energy management in a sense. So it's really similar. A lot of principles, Jinesh, you can use from training as well, like readiness to train and so forth. So when the sun's out, make hay. So if you know, for argument's sake, Monday mornings is a really good time that you can get stuff done.
Yeah.
Like, do as much as you can within those, as opposed to Tuesday morning. The example I give you is, I know for a fact, for argument's sake, I'm much more productive. I can get so much more done between 7 and 9 compared to the same 2 hours in the evening.
Yeah.
7 and 9.
Yeah.
So if I sat down between 7 and 9 in the morning, I'd get much more done compared to the same 2 hours between 7 and 9 in the evening. Yeah, and it's just kind of like attention, awareness, and fatigue, obviously management. And I suppose when you're working with an athlete, it's the same. If they feel good to train today, you kind of try to get the most out of the player.
Yeah, 100%.
The athlete.
Yeah, and I think it also goes back to, again, like you said, you probably work better in the morning. I'm the same. I work better in the morning than the evening. And that's just historically how I know myself. I mean, that's been a trait since school, that I get my better work done in the morning. And I guess I am more of a morning person, and that's probably where that fits into. But other people might be able to. I mean, I had a very good friend that his brain basically switched on in terms of deep work only at 9 o'clock at night. So he could pull a 9 to midnight.
Oh, 100%. Yeah.
And that's where he would get his productive work done. So like you said, it's more awareness management.
Yeah. So we definitely have different ebb and flows to work, I'd argue. The other thing I wanted to mention, Jinesh, is the other book and kind of author, and now like he has a few podcasts out there, which also, and I suppose part of this, and there's a quote kind of related to this, is that a book makes sense only because it like speaks to you in that point in your life or something to that effect. It's as if the book found you in a way, or the author. And so there's another book that I'd recommend to listeners called 4,000 Weeks, Time Management for Mortals by Oliver Berkman. And so it's titled 4,000 Weeks because that's the amount of time we have in our entire life if you lived to 75.
Wow.
and so if you understand that there's limited time, your perspective on things changes and what's most meaningful changes. And the underlining thesis of Oliver Berkman that I really enjoy is to recognize one's limitations, that we can't do it all.
Yeah.
That we're not gonna get more and more done.
Yeah.
And that's not the goal of, you know what I mean? There's family, there's friends, there's leisure time, there's social aspects, and so the point in kind of in his, and just the sense of Oliver Berkman, he was a Washington Post, I think. He was a journalist on productivity. He literally researched almost all productivity concepts, approaches, and hacks that you can, and almost came full circle in that they actually all don't work in a sense, because by definition, productivity wants you to do more, but the goal isn't to do more. It shouldn't be to do more because you have a finite time on earth.
And I guess it's the whole quality versus quantity, is what you're referring to. It's like you want to do good quality work as opposed to poorer work but larger quantities. And that's where it becomes important to start.
100%. Yeah. Exactly. And intense work and good work. But at the same time, enjoy life and not lose sleep or not enjoy the sun. And I mean, I know this is a very sounding Cape Townian thing, but go out, you know what I mean? And then go to the beach and to the mountains. And I mean, in Carl Newport's Deep Work book and Oliver Berkman, I mean, there's almost a section in the Deep Work book about where Carl Newport says you must switch off at 5 o'clock or at 6 o'clock.
Yeah.
When the day ends, the day ends.
Yeah.
But what that does is, literally part, what I read earlier this week was, there's a company that instead of 5 days, work 5 days a week, you work 4 days a week.
Mm.
And when they changed to that strategy, the employees of that company were more productive. And what it means is kind of related to the 4,000 weeks is that once you know your limit, once you understand that there's only, you get more, you realize where you're wasting time. You start to identify where you're wasting time. And so you become more productive essentially. And then on, kind of part of that was in the Friday they got off for leisure time and they kind of their wellness went up as well.
Yeah, like I think it was in the Carl Newport book where they talk about again they used an example. I think it was if it takes you 3 hours to write 1,000 words, rather set your timer for 1.5 hours because chances are if in your mind it takes 3 hours that you've probably built in 1.5 hours of fat and that's distraction. So it probably means, and if you challenge yourself to get it done within 1.5 hours, you can cut out the distraction and actually get it done in 1.5 hours. So that's, I guess, again, the same principle.
Yeah, 100%. In Carl Newport's case, he was also arguing is the importance of leisure time in the sense of if you continue working into, like, and this is like maybe shallow work stuff, you know, like the emails that come on the evening maybe that you need to get through and stuff, but actually affects your work the next day.
Yeah.
And you work... The quality of work is less the next day if you try to squeeze in too much work in one go and not break and not take time off.
Yeah.
The other thing though, he does speak a bit about like and I'm guilty of this. You do tend to inverted commas here relax in a bad way. Like you know, like you do dead scrolling or watch random stuff on TV. And so that's also the point being is just aware being aware of that. The point about Oliver Berkman, though, again, that he like is just kind of emphasizing the notion that we are humans, we are normal. You know what I mean? We should stop being so hard on ourselves if we not get everything done.
Yeah,
that we've kind of like set out for ourselves. A nice kind of example, he says to manage things is he calls it the 3-3-3 technique. Get 3 things done that are super important, 3 shallow things, and then 3 things that are just kind of meaningful to you in the day, whether it's exercise, time with your family. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And but it's setting a very low bar, three things, yeah. In a way. And another, yeah.
I mean, Sharif, it's nice that you brought in the importance of actually bringing in downtime to your day, because again, I think to understand deep work is quite a cognitively taxing task. It's very different to a 2-minute email that you need to respond to or think a little bit about. It's actually, it requires quite a bit of engagement. And that's why it is important to, I almost want to say, schedule in your downtime. But like you said, by 5 o'clock, you should be shutting down and trying your best to not do too much after that, because it is going to affect your next day, which then affects your next day, which affects your next week. And that's where I'm glad you brought in the component of actually a part of being productive is actually being unproductive as well, because being unproductive helps your productivity.
Yeah. Exactly. And so that's super important. And I mean, again, even Carl Newport will say this, and that will help you even kind of, in a weird way, focus on your relaxation as well, on your leisure time, as opposed to always checking the email or the WhatsApp. Because in that moment, even just like looking at the email or the WhatsApp, you know what I mean? It takes full energy that you, and then puts you on a different train of thought where you were supposed to be spending time with your son or enjoying the mountain, etc.
Yeah, and Sharif, sorry, I just wanted to bring this in. We were chatting about this, I think, a couple of days ago, where we spoke about the only time you feel unproductive is when you've actually scheduled something productive in that time and now it hasn't worked out. And you actually brought that to my attention, because obviously I'm now having times where I feel like I should be productive, but I'm not being productive. And my strategy around that was just saying, okay, I'm going to figure out the ebb and flows of my day. And when there is calm within the chaos, I will schedule my work in. And just doing that, that little mental shift has made me a little bit less stressed about being unproductive, because I'm not scheduling in productive hours almost until I can. So I think it was just quite an interesting point around when you feel unproductive, or when do you feel like you are feeling unproductive?
Yeah, and I suppose there's a couple of things pointed to that. And this comes from the Oliver Berkman type concepts, in that there's no such thing really as work-life balance, number one. He speaks about that, the argument for that. You work with ebb and flow. Some weeks will be highly productive and you're doing a lot. Some weeks might not be, because there's a lot of family demands. And so it's setting your expectation in that way. And in a way, he also highlights the point about like what is interruptions in a way. And the point is exactly what you just said now. If you have 1 hour, but you thought that hour was for work, but now you have an inverted comma, an interruption, which is maybe like your son running in the room or your daughter in your case.
Yeah,
that's actually one of the most important times in your life. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah,
spending
exactly.
time with your family.
Yeah.
So that's not necessarily an interruption.
Yeah.
It's just how you perceive it.
Yeah. So perception is so important.
And so, yeah. And so again, so then, related to your point, sorry, and I'm getting carried away here, is that we also have to be like kind of gentle with ourselves in that sense, and not be too hard and, you didn't hit the mark product, again, inverted commas, of productivity today or for that week. Because, I mean, other things happened.
Yeah, no, 100%. Sharif, I think this conversation has been very insightful. Do you have any closing comments from your side before we close up the conversation?
No, obviously, we obviously getting cut short because we're time managing in a weird way. But hopefully we can continue. Yeah, there's a lot still to talk about, and there's things I still wanted to share. Again, we can maybe do this on the regular and we can catch up again.
Yeah, 100%.
Hopefully we get some feedback from listeners as if they want more of this. Look out for the unproductive series, the unproductive academic. That's what we're calling it. And we'll share some things related to that.
Yeah,
there's loads of stuff still like to share. Yeah.
No, great. Sharif, thank you so much. I really appreciate it.
Cool. Thank you, Janesh. And then we look forward to meeting everyone at the conference in a couple of weeks' time.
Thanks, Sharif.